Last year in my report to the congregation about General Assembly, I related what one of the chaplains said to us during a particularly tense portion of the proceedings. She admitted that democracy, following Robert's Rules of Order, doesn't feel like holy work. It really didn't. We are a religious faith, not a national parliament. In recognition of those challenges, this year at General Assembly, they included covenantal discussions among a small panel of participants prior to each of the major votes. We're going to use a similar approach to sharing with you our report from General Assembly today. So let's get started. Hi, good to see you all.
Good morning.
There you go. It's working. So this is your first General Assembly, and this was your first General Assembly, and this was your first General Assembly, and this was your first General Assembly as well. So how did it feel to be at your first General Assembly? What impact did it have on your feelings about being a Unitarian Universalist, and what feelings did it have, what impact did it have on your feelings about being a member here at UMIN?
So I guess I can start. I was scheduled to, a little background, I was scheduled to join everybody at General Assembly until Fulton County decided I needed to have one of those days set aside to join them for jury duty, which I didn't have to go, but that's why I was not with everybody. I was honored to be able to serve our congregation as a delegate this year, without question. And I was a little concerned what it would be like being separated from everybody. But I will tell you, we do technology pretty good in the Unitarian Church. And I was able to sit at my computer, have the General Assembly up, watch the entire proceedings, and there was a whole while you guys were interacting with each other, there was a whole group of us who couldn't be there who were interacting with each other constantly. There was an ongoing blog or going on that we were talking to each other. We could also interact, as they know. I interacted on one occasion and was...
And they pronounced your name wrong.
I'm used to that, so that was not a big deal. But for me, it was an honor, and especially this year, I think especially with all the stuff that was going on, it was a real honor to be able to be there as a representative of UMIN this year.
I will say that it was rather overwhelming. I was there with my children, who are 9 and 4, and they had children's programming available. And for my kids, it was separate, and it was more like childcare than kids programming. So I would have liked it to be a little bit more interactive, but it was great that the kids were thought of. And as they get older, I look forward to them being able to participate as part of the youth programming, which was amazing. There were so many youth represented at GA. I found that because there was so much opportunity to do business and to do workshops that I was pulling back a little bit and talking one-on-one with people a lot more than I had expected to, and that highlighted for me how important the relationships are in my faith. And how that reflects for me here at UMIN is that I think I've been focusing a little bit on the business and the work part of church and not as much on the relationships. So that was important for me as part of my first GA.
Well, I've been a Unitarian Universalist for 20 plus years now, and this was my first GA, so I decided it was time for me to get on the train and understand what the bigger picture was all about. So I also knew that New Orleans was where I went to college. So I hadn't visited since then, so I had myself a little plan. I was going to take the bus with the Northwest people to get to know them a little bit. I was going to attend a workshop or two. I was going to find a friend, and then I was going to hit the French Quarter hard. and then crawl back to the bus on Sunday and sleep on the way home. So that was my big plan. And it didn't turn out that way, but anyway, I had a good time, and it was important for me and my faith development to be there.
I really didn't know what to expect, but anytime somebody says, let's go to New Orleans, I'm there. So that was my biggest thing until the controversy started, and then I was like, oh, I better pay attention to what I'm supposed to be doing. It was overwhelming, but it was also very inspirational. I got to meet a lot of people that I correspond with on Twitter and Facebook. I got to meet them in person, so it was fun, but overwhelming.
Yeah, this is my second GA as a delegate here, and I tell you, it has been my fuel for the last couple of years. I mean, I was getting towards the end of this past church year a couple of months ago, and I'm like, another worship service. And now I've got ideas and inspiration for another year of worship services, and it really is my fuel, and I'm kind of concerned that I'm not going to go next year, but I'll have to spread this fuel out for 2 years. Dig in a little bit more, if you could, please, about how you feel it affects your role. I mean, as Leanne talked about it, how does it affect your role here at Human? How does it affect your participation here at Human? If you guys could dig into that a little bit further.
Well, for me, it was amazing that there were so many people that were willing to be in tough discussions. There were a lot of brave people out there, and one of the things that I learned is to, in order to help those people that are resistant about the conversations, is to, a lot of times we say we're in a safe space, we're in a safe space, and one of the things that I learned in the workshops was to change the word from safe to brave. Let's be brave. And there are a lot of people that they don't necessarily have any answers, but they were willing to listen. And from what I gather from hearing long UUs, a lot of people like to talk, but they're not as willing to listen. And I had a one-on-one conversation with a guy that was like, my goal is to just sit here and listen, and it's been very, very difficult. But I made a promise to myself that I wasn't going to talk. I was just going to listen. And he said he was learning something.
Yeah. There was definitely and is definitely a spark that was lit at GA for me. And I feel like part of my role is to bring that back in the best way that I can to everybody here at Human. And also, the learnings that you get they're very visceral, and they have to do with people-to-people relationships, like Liam was talking about, and like you were talking about as well. And one thing that Sheila led me into was, she goes, come on with me, I'm coming to, or maybe I butted in, I don't know, but she said, come with me, I'm going to this healing space for people of color. And I was like, okay, I'll come. And, you know, my mind is going, okay, I read in the little thing that I'm not supposed to go into that space, you know, being a person that's not a person of color. And Sheila goes, no, it's okay, it's okay. So I came into that space, and there were a lot of people of color there. And I was surprised at myself, and the reaction that I had on the inside was I realized that I'd never been in a place, or not very, couldn't remember being in a place where I was the minority. So I had an experience on the inside of feeling strange and particularly standing out in some way that wasn't comfortable. So I was grateful for that experience, even though I was going, Sheila, I'm not supposed to be here. So, yeah, so that's hard to bring back, but I'm just offering that for your for you guys.
At the risk of being redundant about relationships here at home, that's definitely a focus for me. But also what Sheila was saying about that there are a lot of brave people, and so I need to really carry this idea of recognizing a willingness in people to do better, and in myself, this willingness. So it's not about having all of the right answers or saying and doing the right thing all the time, but just a willingness to do better. So I want to be able to recognize that in myself and in others.
So although it wasn't official yet, I wore my president's hat of this congregation the entire time I was there. I did that intentionally, thinking what's going to happen with us, to us, and for us as a result of General Assembly. I found myself going into that normal space, and I think I talked about this a couple weeks ago, saying, okay, what can I do, what can I do, what can I do, what can I do, what can I do? And I realized quickly as I was listening to it, also thinking about how we're structured here at Human moving forward, it's like, I'm here to say that the board is completely on board with all the work that needs to be done, but y'all are going to be busy. Because that's the way we work here. This is the work that the congregation has to do and is charged to do. And I'm a member of that congregation, so I will be part of that work. But the board can't fix the things that we talked about, those hard lessons. It's stuff that we're going to have to do as a congregation, and I know we can. I know we can tackle these things. It's not going to be easy. But I'm here to say we, as president, we support every piece of this work that needs to be done. We need to figure out how to do it. But also, as Randy, I'm telling you now that my sleeves are rolled up, ready to do that work alongside you. So,
great. Thanks.
So this General Assembly was held in the shadow of our faith's admitted failure to live up to its commitment to become a truly welcoming and inclusive multicultural, multiracial, multi-faith community. And this follows from at least two previous General Assemblies during which the denomination's failure to decenter its white legacy was highlighted. So the question I have is, after all the controversy that Sheila mentioned and what we heard over the course of the spring, where do you feel our faith and our congregation stands now with regard to these specific issues after General Assembly?
I was going a lot by feel of how things were going at the assembly, and I can tell you that place was tight in the beginning. It was anxious. There was a feeling of what's going to happen, and not in a real excited, anticipatory way, but like in a not sure kind of way. And I felt a shift, a major shift, after Brian Stevenson's Ware lecture, which I think we're going to talk about in a minute. But I just want to say that shift is possible on every level in the Unitarian Universalist faith, I believe. And I felt it. And it felt really good because it felt welcoming, it felt relaxed, and I was happy to be swimming in it.
I would second that. The unease and uncertainty at first about how things would play out with so many of us gathered in love and intention. And here at Human and at General Assembly, I feel as if there are people who are taking an active role in these matters and some taking a more passive role, waiting and watching and wanting to be led along. And I felt a similar shift after Mr. Stevenson's lecture. And I think that we're really at this point where there is this willingness for so many more of us to step into a more active role and take on things in ourselves and in our homes and here at UMIN to work towards these goals that I think we all believe in and want to work towards. So I think that there's a beauty in this tension, and that with leaders like Brian Stevenson, who can really light this fire in us to be more proactive and move forward. And it's exciting. It's an exciting thing to be part of here and with thousands of UUs.
I think for me, I'm going to be really open and honest about this. I understand intellectually a lot of what was going on. The schisms, the issues around it. Intellectually, I read everything. I was there, but I didn't get it. I mean, at a core place in my soul, I didn't get it. And I think part of it is just because of where I come from and how I believe. I didn't get what it was until one of the panel discussions where our three presidents were sitting in a situation very similar to this, and they were talking about it. And I can't remember the exact moment, but I literally typed into the blog that we were all following, the delegates and so forth who were remote. And by the way, there were 105 of us remote. So there was a large contingent of people who were doing what I was doing. And I really typed in and said, I finally get it. And I think that was my shift that you guys were talking about, from anxious and not understanding and really almost really literally pulling at my hair trying to understand at that core level, and I finally got it, and now I understand, and I understand the work that we have to do as a denomination, a work that we have to do as a congregation, and a work that I've got to do as a person moving forward.
Well, I have to be honest and say that my experience was totally different than theirs. I belong to BLUE, which is Black Lives of Unitarian Universalism, and they did a lot of work preparing us in case it was tense. So I think I was prepared on how to react, and we had this space we could go to, and there was already pastoral care that was already set up. But that first night at that first, what it was called, opening ceremony, I felt it right then and there, because right away they called out white supremacy, and in the services I heard songs from my childhood. They were saying Ashe. And each morning, when I attended the morning workshops with you, I was hearing bell hooks and Audre Lorde and who else? Octavia Butler, maybe. So there was, I think, I felt encouraged, because I felt like there was a conscious effort even there to model how we should move forward.
What I'm not sure has made it through, I mean, it's been a new world, but the three presidents that we're talking about are Leon Spencer, the Reverend William Sinkford, and the Reverend Sophia Betancourt. And they served for 11 weeks as presidents after the, as co-presidents after the former president of the UA resigned. I think 11 weeks, and I can't believe how it changed the tenor of GA. There are two things in my mind that were very different about this GA, and one I'll talk about later. But this one here, it was just, and I, with all due credit to Leon Spencer and all due credit to Reverend Sinkford, Reverend Betancourt's comments, like you said, it helped people get it. And you know, it's like, as we're voting on the next president of the UA, all all through the assembly, people are saying, wait a minute, can't we have her do it? And, you know, and I think, you know, she's young enough, right? She can do it in 6 years from now. She's just such a great leader, but also a great communicator, and really helped bridge gaps that last year were not bridged at all. And so that's what it, you know, as soon as she started speaking, and the co-presidents spoke several times during the course of the GA, I really felt that, you know, really pulling together. I was very, very encouraged by that. So we've talked a little bit about Brian Stevenson. Let's talk a little bit more. A highlight of General Assembly was the Ware Lecture. This year it was offered by Brian Stevenson. He's an American lawyer, a social justice activist, and he's the founder and executive director of the Equal Justice Initiative. So let's gush and about how great that was. How did the lecture affect you, and what did you feel are the most important of Mr. Stevenson's messages that our congregation needs to hear?
I'll go first because I loved it. I thought it was more of a sermon than a lecture. It was very inspiring and spiritual. And the thing that really struck me was how he said we need to change the narrative. And it seems like something just clicked in my head that made me understand things a little bit better when he said, slavery ended, but the narrative about race didn't end. And that's what we need to work on. And then a little bit, I think maybe 2 weeks after that, I was reading the paper about a study that said that people view black girls as less innocent than white girls. And then it took me back to him talking about how this narrative about race fuels the politics of fear and anger, which fuels unjust laws and policies. So then it just clicked to me, okay, this is why some people aren't upset when a three-year-old is suspended from the nursery or a 12-year-old is shot, is because they don't see them as a child. And we have this language of super predator for black and brown kids, and that narrative needs to change. So that's the one thing that stuck with me, is what is the work that I can do to help change that narrative?
When Mr. Stevenson approached the lectern, I had a seat right up front, very close to the front, and I saw in his face, he looked tired to me. He had the lines of somebody that has fought and sometimes lost. And when he began to speak, though, something changed in him, and I saw this light come on his face. You know, I wasn't sure I wanted to listen to a man that had fought and lost and was tired, frankly, to begin with. And then I saw this light come into his face, and I said, oh, fantastic. He's also won. He's won, and he's won a lot. And he's done the hard work of justice. And so I opened myself to his words. And I even said, like, most specifically and practically, I allow this man's words to affect me. And I went through every single emotion, from the grief of those things that are left undone and will be left undone for who knows how long, and the things that I can't affect in my own life and seem huge. And then I also was able to catch the feeling of accomplishment for some things that have been done, and the stories that he told of justice that was served. And it left me with a hope that rose from the belly. And I'm pretty sure it came up into my face too. And when I left the hall, I encountered a young woman who was beside herself. Her father was standing by her looking like, what am I going to do? She's a crying woman. I'm scared of it. So I just went up and hugged her, and I could feel, you know, she was a young woman. She just looked at me and said, life-changing. And I hugged her and I said, it's good. It's good. So, yeah, it was good.
I am fortunate to have heard Mr. Stevenson speak once before, almost 2 years ago in Richmond. If you haven't read his book, Just Mercy, or you haven't seen his TED Talk, please do. I fail to find the words to describe how this man conveys messages. Since the last time I heard him speak, he sort of crystallized his four main points, the first of which was proximity. It's about getting close to troubling situations. One was changing the narrative that Sheila mentioned. The third was to become more comfortable with being uncomfortable, that's okay for us to be uncomfortable. And the fourth, why do I always...
Fighting
hopelessness, yes. So to remain hopeful as we are doing these things.
Of course, I'm cheating. I have it written down.
And so the one that really spoke to me was proximity, and about not waiting until we think we're ready to step into a situation where people need help, to get close to people who need our help, to just get close to them and feel ourselves grow as we are trying to be of service. And I think that we're doing that already here with our Family Promise program, which is coming up again in September. So if you didn't have an opportunity to practice proximity, then you have another chance. But I think that that's true, and it also touches on not thinking that we can't do things until we know the exact right way to do it or have the right answers, that you just step forward and have a willingness to get close to people. And that really spoke to me, the proximity part.
So another full disclosure, we were initially told when we got all our remote delegate stuff that the Ware Lecture was not going to be broadcast. That changed, and it was able to be broadcast. However, I will also tell you that was a night that I was fighting technology, and it was cutting in and out. I wasn't alone, it turns out. It was freezing, it was coming in and out. It was just, I think a lot of people who were not a part of the other pieces of GA were logging in. So I went to it from a different place. I actually was there angry because I couldn't be there with you guys because it was taken away from me. And technology was not letting me be fully immersed. But the one piece that I will tell you I will take away is the fact that his lecture, the pieces of it I caught live were amazing. You could feel the energy in the room, but his lecture will mean nothing if we don't do the work.
I want to talk just a little bit about what he means by change the narrative, and like I said, I'm cheating. I have some of this stuff written down. I thought it was important enough to give an example of what he's talking about here. The Equal Justice Initiative, his organization, plans to build a national memorial to victims of lynching and open a museum that explores African-American history from enslavement to mass incarceration. Both the museum and memorial will be located in Montgomery, but in addition to that, EJI is placing markers at lynching sites across the country in an effort to change the landscape of the American South, which is saturated right now with iconry and memorials romanticizing the Confederacy and the effort to preserve slavery. So that's, you know, we've got all of these markers reminding us of the Civil War, but most of them are glorifying one side. And the idea here is to place markers wherever there were lynchings. And so that effort has begun. I have one more question for you, and just a couple of minutes to answer it. So if you have anything in particular that you learned about how to do church better, please share that with us.
I'm going to talk about it briefly from my role as president of the board And the one thing I learned that we need to do better is the one thing that I think you mentioned, one of the folks mentioned, is we are really good at talking, and I'm one of those people who falls into that category. We have got to listen. And we need to not, and I'm going to say this honestly, I don't need to listen to Bruce Langston about race issues. I don't need to listen to Bob Mihalik about race issues. Yes, it's good to get that input. I need to listen to Sheila. I need to listen, truly listen to Lynn May. Because although I went to schools that were bused in, and I was part of mandatory busing as a kid when I grew up, my experience doesn't matter. Your experience matters. Your experiences are the ones that we have got to change that narrative and listen to. Because as much as we like to pretend, and I'm using that word pretend honest on purpose, as liberal members of the liberal religious community, white members of the liberal religious community, we can claim and hold those banners, and we can hold one into that Black Lives Matter banner, and I will, and I will continue to do so. But my history is not what needs to be changed. Your history is what needs to be changed, and how I interact with you is what I've got to change and what we have to change as a church. It isn't about inclusivity. It isn't about, well, we do this. We march. Shelley talked a little bit about last week. We've got to change who our elected officials are. We've got to stand up and say, it's not good enough. It's not good enough. Listen to the people who can tell us the stories of what matters and help us. One thing that I do remember, and I'm going to end with this, is, and I think it was Reverend Bettencourt who said this, white people, we don't need you to come in and fix it for us. We're tired of that. You don't need to be the ones to fix it. We need you standing with us as we fix it together. And I think that's the piece that really stood out to me, and the part that changed my heart is I got to stop thinking and pretending that I can fix the problems of the Black community. What I can do is stand next to them and work together with them and truly listen to their stories and allow their stories to be told.
One of the things that I remember, and I can't remember who said it, said something like, it's our culture, not our theology, that needs to change. Do you remember who said that?
I've heard it. I don't remember who said it. I remember the
word. I think it was one of the co-presidents that said it. And I think that that's one of the things that we need to look at when we think about how we do church. Even this is probably different. And, you know, people freak out when there's any kind of change. So, just know it's going to be okay.
That's good. Yeah, it's going to be okay. And I got a chance to go to a workshop with a guy named Chuck Collins, who was a one percenter who gave his money away and began working for justice in many ways. And one of the things that I brought back inside was that it's not that we can do many things to do church better. To truly be inclusive is a bigger picture than just our congregation. It has to do with, like you said, culture. Also, what's happening in Roswell in our municipality is that right now, you know, it's totally gentrifying and it's totally, you know, becoming a place where affluential white people are living. So it's a big picture to think about. I'm just asking us, as we think about the ways to do church better, think about the ways that we can do our community better and make way for a local living economy and community here in Roswell, Georgia, and wherever you all may come from.
I'll be brief, but it was interesting to me that in such a large gathering of so many UUs, I just kept coming back to like bringing it smaller. I just kept thinking about how to change my own attitudes and change my own narratives in myself, and how much work can be done in my home and at my work and at my little church here, and that everything doesn't need to be on this grand scale all the time, that you can just, there's so much, if we just right in our surroundings, there's so much work to be done, and good work, and so that I could really focus there, focus here, and just bring it smaller was sort of what I kept coming back to, and how to do church better.
Thanks. So one of the other changes to how the business was done at General Assembly was we would pause for 2 minutes after these panel discussions, before we got into the pro microphone, the procedural microphone, and the con microphone part of the debate. And we paused for those 2 minutes for the folks in the assembly to share with their neighbor, one-on-one or two-on-one, one-on-one-on-one, to share with their neighbor their reaction to what they heard during the panel discussion, their impressions of the matters that were just discussed by the panel. So let's just do that now for 2 minutes. Please take the next 2 minutes, chat with the person sitting next to you or behind you about your impressions of what you just heard from this panel.